When you say knew each other, you mean you knew each other well.
Well enough so she trusted me.
You were lovers, perhaps?
Oh, Jesus, you French.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 494 of the week of January 15th, 2023.
Got the year wrong.
Damn it. I am nude lap swimmer and dong shower offer David T. Cole, and I'm here with American since birth, Sarah D. Bunting.
Salt and pepper and ketchup, please.
Hot club co-owner Tara Ariano.
Meaning I'm the co-owner of Hot Club.
And cantankerous old French lady Caroline LeFloc.
Go away, you American.
Dave, what year is it?
No comment.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us for the second time, she is a teacher from France. You've heard with us before. Also submitting to the canon many times, it's Caroline LeFloc.
Woo!
Bonjour.
Welcome back. We are here to discuss AMC's new show, Monsieur Spade, in which legendary private detective Sam Spade, Clive Owen, departs his usual stomping grounds of San Francisco to return Teresa, the daughter of a former acquaintance, to her father's ancestral home in Bozoul, France. The problem is, Philippe, her father, is not there. Philippe's mother, Audrey, won't take her, and the local police commander basically just wants Sam to leave town. Also, Sam doesn't speak French. Then he meets a wealthy widow and decides to stay. 8 years later, after the widow has died, we rejoin Sam just in time for him to hear tell of Philippe's return to Bozoul, coinciding with a violent attack at the convent school where Teresa is studying. Or is it a coincidence? Everyone in Bozoul has secrets, and Sam is apparently implicated in all of them. The series is co-created by Scott Frank, who previously made The Queen's Gambit, and Tom Fontana, the co-creator of Oz. Only one episode has aired so far on AMC. We did get the whole season, though, so we will be careful of spoilers should they come up. Let's do the Chen check-in. Caroline, should our listeners watch Monsieur Spade?
I'd say yes.
Sarah?
It's complicated, but yes?
Mm-hmm. Dave?
There's things about it that I enjoy a lot, but taken as a whole, I'm like a little hesitant to give it a recommendation.
Yeah, exact same.
So yeah. I'll just even things out and be on the no side of what Sarah just put out there.
Yeah, I mean, Dave and I watched together, surprising no one. And I, at the end of the second episode, I was like, this isn't really hitting for me. And that's kind of how I feel. I may watch one more and see if it progresses, but we'll get into it. Let's start here. Caroline, I know the awkward feeling of seeing Canada portrayed for an American audience. What was it like for you watching this portrayal of France, knowing Americans are going to see?
Actually, I think they did a pretty good job evoking the France in the 60s. Mm-hmm. The cars are right, the music is right, costumes are okay as well. My one issue where I really had to really think about it and find excuses in my head is that everybody speaks English. This is a remote place. Aveyron is a very deserted kind of countryside. It's far away from everything. And nobody speaks English, I think, in 2024 over there. So that the fact that he can actually have long conversation with multiple people in this village, it just stretches credibility to a level that, for example, for the policeman, I had to come up with a complete history in my head. Like during World War II, he became best friend with an American GI. Yeah. And even though it's a boat trip to go to America, but at the time he went there, and that's how he learned to speak such a beautiful English.
I think you're the TV maker's best friend because you're doing a lot of the lifting for them, where I don't think it's really your responsibility, but I get it. I mean, I didn't really think about that because we're just so used to, you know, getting our way with language, you know, America or else, that didn't really think about that. But yeah, I mean, if this was, you know, the Welsh countryside or whatever, it would be the same deal. You would just not get your way if you didn't speak the language. So good point. The rest of it, the 60s of it, the countryside of it, that was my favorite part of the show. The old abode porn. the old cottages that they all live in there, the bar, everything about the set design, the locations that they were shooting in. I was really interested in watching the show just for that. And then, you know, we can discuss some mysteries on top of that. But I suspect if this show was on Apple TV, that right now Sarah Bunting would be complaining about how they're showing how expensive the show is. Because it did seem like that, like Filmmaker's Holiday, where it's like, I'm going to pitch something where I get to be in France for a year. Mm. And God bless you if you can get away with that. But that part of it, you know, the 60s of it all, we got one leg in the modern era, we got one firmly in the past, and there's this sort of like transition happening right now in this show, in this town. Presented visually, I love that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, comment because you were nodding.
Absolutely. I mean, most of my notes, and I didn't take many, although I did watch the whole thing.
Me too.
But most of my notes were about that it was making me miss Perry Mason, the HBO one, because it had that same, I don't know how else to put this, but like it's a hangout comedy, except it's noir. So it's like a hangout noir. But he goes into his study with that low, like, kidney-shaped table and the just this mid-century modern furniture and then the build-ins and all the books. And I was like, I just want to live in that room, in that color palette. It just was fantastic. And, like, his late wife's scarves and her lipstick, like, everything was just so perfectly mid-century but with none of the bad stuff, really. So it was beautiful to look at, and it might be enough. Like in some episodes, that was enough for me, but diminishing returns in other ways.
Okay.
I would say.
I'm going to break in here to say we have dogs on site in all of our locations. So you may hear dog noises. we are all trying to be responsible, but you know, dogs are going to dog. So, you know, deal with it. Caroline, we asked you on because of the setting, of course, but also because I know you are a fan of classic detective characters. Did the amount of mystery we saw, we'll keep it to the series premiere in deference to our listeners who haven't seen the whole series. Did you get enough mystery in the series premiere to grab you? Obviously, you kept watching, so I assume the answer is yes.
Yes and no. I think that for the viewers, if you really love a sort of a locked room mystery where the mystery is the star of the show, you're going to be disappointed. I think it's actually Sarah's point about film noir actually made me feel about, you know, The Maltese Falcon, that this type of movie.
Yes.
Where really the mystery, it's not really the point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The point is to evoke an atmosphere, create characters, to evoke maybe a few issues, social issues and things like that. I am from the Dan Cassino Mystery Club.
Uh-huh.
Which means that I love when the mystery is really well thought out, where, you know, there's a clear antagonist, there's a clear motivation, and there's some sort of resolution at the end. So if that's an issue for you, I would steer clear of the series.
One of the problems I had with the show as we went along, Sam Spade's kind of boring. And I didn't think Sam Spade was supposed to be boring based on things I knew about Sam Spade. But he seems like kind of defeated from the get-go, and it makes it kind of hard to engage with. So it's like, what is this character supposed to be? Because I don't think we're getting Sam Spade, like, original flavor here. And again, this is sort of like a postscript on his career as far as continuity goes. So maybe that is where his headspace is at, and that was the way it was supposed to be written. Whether that makes a better product, I would say probably not. Mm-hmm. But Hammett envisioned this character like as sort of like what a PI thought he was in his own mind, right? You know, when you look in the mirror, you got all the muscles. So like his vision of it for Sam Spade was like a heightened ideal of a private investigator. Not that he was like a solver of mysteries, but insofar that nobody ever got the best of him because he was more savvy or more physically able, that nobody got a leg up on them for those reasons. And I didn't get that coming across with Clive Owen, Sam Spade.
Yeah.
Like, he needed more, like, swagger or something, like, to make it easier to get your hooks into.
And we should also say, in case it wasn't clear, this is not based on any Dashiell Hammett book. The character has come into the public domain. It's the Steamboat Willie of noir. So that is why Scott Frank and Tom Fontana were able
to... That's why he's always whistling and turning that fucking
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So this is a whole new creation from Scott Frank.
Did you hear my brain shut off when I was trying to think of what the wheel is called?
Yeah.
Fucking ship wheel thing.
We'll come back to Scott Frank, but Caroline, for me, the increased in episode 2 hinting around about resistance activities in this town during the war, that was one of the things that made me want to keep watching. Did this intrigue you, or was it something that you wished these very much not French writers stayed away from?
I'm going to surprise you here. What I really appreciated, and I don't think it's a spoiler, it's just a part of the theme that they are trying to evoke. It's actually the Algerian War. And I really appreciated that. And I actually think it's better that it's from the point of view of someone, of an outsider, because the Algerian War has been a complete taboo in France, mm-hmm. to the point that I was a student in the 80s and 90s, even late 90s, and I never, ever was taught anything about it. It's better now. It's better. People are talking about it in the media and everything. But for the longest time, people behaved as though it never happened. And they didn't take responsibility for all the shit that went down there and all the torture and things that the French army inflicted on the people and women and civilians. And I think it's actually better to see this from the point of view of someone who doesn't have a stake in that fight, to have more of an objective vision of it. And I truly appreciated that. And it compensated for me what was lacking in terms of mystery.
Okay.
The one last thing I want to say, because you're talking about Sam Spade's wife. I don't know if you know, but she's played by French royalty, really.
Yeah.
She's played by Chiara Mastroianni. Mm-hmm. And she's the daughter of the French actress Catherine Deneuve and the Italian iconic actor Marcello Mastroianni.
And she looks just like them both. And
she
it's
does.
Wild. Wild.
And she sounds exactly like her mother.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she does.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
I would watch a prequel about her. So, universe, hear my cry.
Sarah, I know we both read Scott Frank's recent profile in The New Yorker, which we'll link in the show notes. Did that affect your expectations for Monsieur Spade? They only sort of touch on it, but it was more about his whole career and how he's kind of like a journeyman screenwriter in the way we don't really see, and that he's not so much of a specialist.
It didn't really affect my expectations. I sort of happened to read that. I like got to it in the stack of New Yorkers before mm-hmm. I started watching
Same.
This. So, I mean, that was like a happy coincidence, and it made me sort of reconsider my decision not to care about the Queen's Gambit, although maybe I shouldn't.
You're fine.
But I think Caroline is right on that this is very noir-y in that everybody's compromised, ethically ambiguous, and shitty. And sometimes your protagonist is slappable as fuck. And that's noir, basically, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Which actually, the way that I put that means that Dawson's Creek is noir, which obviously that's not what I mean. But like from a plot perspective, that's if you're like, I want to know the layout of the mystery and have a brilliantine solution. Mm-hmm. This is not for you,
yeah.
But it was sort of interesting to look at the construction of it and see what I thought they were trying to maximize. Like, are they trying to make this moment, this show, Clive Owen's Daniel Craig in Glass Onion moment?
Uh-huh.
Are they trying to use the moral ambivalences in noir to try to make a comment about Algerian resistance and or parallel it with present day events and the rise of fascism in various places?
Yeah.
But without committing or looking like assholes because they're Americans talking about a French issue.
Yeah.
So having just read that profile, it was kind of from a writer process standpoint,
mm-hmm.
sort of interesting, but then there are things about it where they're trying to have it both ways and that didn't work for me. And
yeah.
So it's like from a writing standpoint, I think they just wanted to write a bunch of really good bogey-ish lines for Clive Owen and they mm-hmm. did that. So I guess.
Yeah.
it didn't really affect me either way. I wasn't like disappointed by mm-hmm. my own disappointment. But you just kind of have to take this for what it is, which is not necessarily a flawlessly designed puzzle box.
When they were writing for Clive Owen, as you said, whether they were trying to, make this a star vehicle for him and his
but
50s, oh, late 50s or whatever he is right now. But yeah, that's what I was going to ask is, do you think on the whiteboard of ideas that bathing in the nude and conspicuously showing his dong to whoever is by the poolside as he very slowly grabbed a towel, dried himself off slowly, and eventually put a robe on, was that one of the character traits you think that they felt was really important? Sarah, your thoughts?
His performative nudistry?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about. Like, I know what it was about on the surface, but then it was sort of like, all right, because I'm enjoying this, I'm not going to really interrogate it that far, but I don't know that we would have seen Bogart's version do that. Even on the page, but maybe he is just that passive aggressive. Who can say?
Caroline, your thoughts on on all of Clive Owen?
Owen Dong.
Well, if I'm completely honest, I thought he was the least interesting character. I mean, he's Clive Owen, so as you say, nice. he looks nice. It's nice to see him around, naked or not. Mm-hmm. But I thought actually the French characters were a lot more compelling and more interesting.
Why do you think only the American got to show his dong?
We don't know that others don't show their dongs in future episodes.
Is there a French word that has the same fun?
Because we won the war.
Dong. Ding dong. What's French for ding dong?
Yeah.
Dong, but circumflex over the O.
There are a few options, but they are quite vulgar. So I'm going to refrain.
Right,
so classy.
Yeah. Look who's protecting her future.
Wrong podcast.
Yeah, I hope we get to see more physically of Stanley Weber, who plays Jean-Pierre Devereaux, a.k.a. French Tom Selleck, because that's the vibe I was getting off that.
See, for me, he reminded me of Ray Purchase from
I could see Ray Purchase, too, from Toast of London, sure. My last note is R.I.P. Charlemagne, that's Gabrielle's dog, who's, like, sitting in the front seat in her first scene and looking out the window, looking extremely like a person, just watching the scenery go by.
Most human tongue in a dog.
Absolute. I mean, somehow. And eyes, I thought.
Something very human about that dog.
That was a good doggy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's time to go around the dial, talking about TV we've been watching lately. Not necessarily fresh, new TV, but let's see what we got. Tara, you start us off.
Dave and I flew to England and watched Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. So overall, I'm not a true crime guy. I've said this before. One exception I will almost always make is for shows about quirky British crimes where no one was murdered, starring A-list character actors, which are told over fewer than 5 episodes. Such as A Very English Scandal, season 1 in particular, Stonehouse with Matthew McFadden, Quiz also with Matthew McFadden. The latest I've enjoyed is Mr. Vaser. This is the Post Office. It's a huge hit on ITV. It has not aired here yet, but I'm sure it's coming to Masterpiece or something soon, because it's like apparently got a bigger audience than the premiere of Downton Abbey. So for those who don't know, I definitely didn't. Starting in the early 2000s, the British Post Office implemented a new computer system called Horizon, and every time they show these computers, they're like lit like Darth Vader. Like, you're definitely supposed to be very scared of them. Apparently, the system was glitchy as hell and made many sub-postmasters, who are like people running wee little postal counters in like village general stores, etc., would enter their receipts in Horizon and see reports of sometimes 4-figure losses. And when they would call the helpline, one guy we see has documentation of having called over 90 times. They would be told no one else is having these problems and told to try various shady-sounding workarounds. In some cases, not only wouldn't this solve the problem, it would double the phantom losses they were showing, and then the sub-postmaster would just be told, well, your contract mandates you're personally responsible for any losses, and if you don't pay it back, you can't open your post office tomorrow. Which we see is like a huge issue with the community. Lots of people depend on this, including pensioners who like get their pension money through the post office. So people lost their life savings paying back these phony losses. People were prosecuted by the post office, which has its own branch to run investigations without actual police involvement. So serious, really bad shit happened. Toby Jones stars as Alan Bates, a sub-postmaster who loses his shop. When some news reports start to come out about other sub-postmasters' struggles, he gets radicalized and starts a movement among them to share information and try to fight back against extremely long odds, like...
Radicalize as far as you could radicalize a group that comes together in a community center and has scones.
Yeah, exactly.
Led by someone who played Truman Capote.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
So I won't say more because the story really goes places. Mm-hmm. I Boy. Was actually like, was so shocked when, what? Yeah. At a certain point. So, and because I didn't know anything at all about the story. But my single favorite thing about it was how entrancing it was to a little boy named David T. Cole. Oftentimes, a show will struggle to command Dave's full attention. I did not see his phone in his hand for a second of this thing, all four episodes, which we watched last night. Every time I glanced down the couch, he was just enjoying it so wholesomely. Dave, talk about your new favorite miniseries.
Sure. Well, you know how much I hate the post office, Tara.
I do know.
I thought it was Mr. Bates you hated the most. I thought the post office here was Dave.
This is a problem because now we got one Mr. Bates in the plus column
yes.
and one in the minus. So,
that's right.
Yeah, Mr. Bates from Downton Abbey with walnuts, but mm-hmm. this guy's pretty good. It does, on paper, it doesn't seem like it would tick boxes for me, but I was smug as a bug in a rug, let me tell you. I'm making it sound like it's a fun romp. It actually is, like, at points, very dark.
No, people do die. Like, they don't get murdered, but they die.
It made me want to move to North Wales.
Oh, it looks stunning.
Bates loses mm-hmm. his little post office because of these phantom charges. He still loses his shop and his livelihood, this thing they've been running, which is, like, the weirdest little store because there's, like, yes. a post office... two dresses, a can of ham in yes. the corner is like one of those.
It's half his post office, half his wife's like yarn store.
Yeah.
It's adorable.
This is the loss oh. of their livelihood. I mean, it was a different time. You know, it was a small little village in the middle of nowhere. I guess maybe everybody passes through the store to get whatever they need. Mm-hmm. It's like the store in Sicily where you have to like order shit in
yeah.
when you want it maybe. Mm-hmm. But then they lose it all, and they have to, like, downgrade. And the cottage they downgrade to is like, yes, please.
It's
like, it needed a paint job and everything, but I'm like, what the fuck? This thing may be going for, like, $750,000 easily today.
It's a two-story house, and at a certain point, it's like they clash over. His wife, the deal was she was going to get a sewing room in this place, and then he sort of, like, takes it over with all of his, like, campaign.
The war room.
Postal campaign yeah. stuff. It's like, there's clearly another bedroom upstairs. Like, yeah. I don't know what you're talking about, what is being done in that other room. But anyway, yes.
To say that I just read that it's the highest show for ITV since Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
So I think Mr. Bates is the name you want to put in your series. At least if you...
Good point.
At least if you're British.
Yeah.
Bates right. Master. Master. Bates?
No, no, uh-huh. no, Sarah, no.
Sorry.
Anyways, there's something about a British scandal that is quite different from the kind of shit we get over here in North America that is like foreign enough to engage you in a way, like say you're just watching like a show about a cult or a subculture or something you don't really know a lot about. Like sometimes these scandals scratch the same itch where you're like, what is this world that we're in? And it's sort of like that.
Yeah.
But also like Toby Jones is fantastic. I couldn't help but think that they probably really wanted to get Fiona Shaw for his wife and didn't.
She does
seems
look like her.
It seems
yes.
like the role that was made
yes,
for her.
Yes, yes,
But yeah, I got no complaints. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. So I'm sure it's coming here soon. So keep an eye out for it because it is sensational.
All right, Carolyn, what do you got for us?
Okay, so my favorite British channel is called Alibi, which I think is just the coolest name. And right now they are broadcasting the American network show, So Help Me Todd. It's definitely not, you know, challenging or anything. It's a network show, but it's a really a feel-good series. And sometimes you just need a feel-good series. So I really recommend it. It's about Skylar Austin and Marsha Gay Harden. They play son and mother. They have a great chemistry together. They have great banter. She plays Margaret. She's a lawyer, and he's a sort of her wayward son who used to be a private investigator. Because of reasons, they work together. And each week, they solve a mystery that proves that Margaret's clients were innocent. So it's very Perry Mason in that way, but in the old-fashioned Perry Mason, not the new one. So it's quite typical. It's quite simplistic but concept, but it's actually quite charming. They get into hijinks every week. It's just nice. It scratches my mentalist itch.
Okay.
You can get a cream for that.
My only issue is Marcia Gay Harden's clothes. I don't know what, you know, the costume designer has against her, but each week they put her in a very busy blouse that usually it overpowers her. Loud, garish blouses. About 2 weeks ago, she was in one that I would describe as Jerry Seinfeld's puffy shirt. But with, you know, sort of stains that you don't know exactly where, you know, if they are stains or artistic blotches of color. Yeah. I don't know. It's not good. It's really not good. And it's very distracting. But other than that, this is, you know, a really nice, it's a really nice series. It's a good way to spend 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
We all need that sometimes.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's true.
You want to plug the people that fixed your floor for you or anything?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't have anything to plug.
Okay. All right. Sarah D. Bunny, what have you been watching recently?
We have been watching, it is now known in my house as The Space Show. I realize that doesn't narrow it down, so I will tell you, it is For All Mankind. A Hi Bob canon presentation from last year, geez, episode 486, inspired me to restart For All Mankind from the beginning. And a few episodes in, I was like, I think Dan actually might like this. Either that or he will hate it. And also vintage car cop Brady will freak out. So far, he has not made any arrests and he really likes the show. I mean, like actually is the wrong word, possibly, because it's not... It's like very compelling without being good or making you feel happy at all. So I don't know why we're still watching it now that I'm speaking about it out loud. But we are in the middle of season two. I noted this on the Discord, but there's one sequence where astronaut Molly Cobb has just gotten exposed to crazy amounts of radiation during a solar flare storm MacGuffin. She disembarks back on Earth from the transport home, and there's all of this feedback whining and lens flaring, and she's all indicating and squinting, and it goes on for a goddamn week. And Dan goes, she'll die of old age in this montage before she dies of radiation poisoning. And I was like, not to worry, honey. I don't think anyone dies on this show. They just get dumber wigs. Yeah. Yay. It's such a classic Apple TV Plus product in that way that at root, it's a soap opera. This one in space, but a soap would get its shit done in under 45 minutes. For All Mankind takes another 20 because it needs to remind you how much it cost and how beautiful and terrifying space is and how beautiful and terrifying humidity is and how merely terrifying and not beautiful at all Joel Kinnaman's fake crow's feet are, et cetera, and so on. And it's not that it's not enjoyable, but it's a period piece soap with obvious Emmy bait pretensions, and that's what the morning show also is. And on some level, the show's own denial about what it is part of its charm.
Yes,
but the journey you go through, and as you get beyond season two, they start to embrace more of the fuck it, we're actually a soap opera vibes that are sort of undercurrents right now. Season one into two has pretensions of being a prestige TV show. The latest season does not. The latest season
I
is like,
am getting that
fuck
sense.
It. It's X in space. It's Y in space. It's Z in space.
Yes.
Let's just do storylines from other shows, but we'll set them in space and see how it flies.
It's gone full bonkers.
Union busting in space? You betcha. Yeah. It is just great. Like, I know people didn't like this season, the last season, generally speaking, but I had fun because I was realizing, oh, the show's falling apart and it's great.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sort of looking forward to that. Yep. And there are things that I know about what happened to certain characters. So when there's like grumbling from the other side of the couch where he's like, and this motherfucker, and I'm like, based on what I accidentally read on Wikipedia, I don't think you have to worry about such and so that much longer. Anyway, For All Mankind. Woo!
Take your headphones off if you absolutely don't want to be spoiled for anything. But the last season has a storyline about smuggling people to Mars.
Yep.
How would that ever work? And then, like, the last scene is just, like, dozens of people coming out of a container in Mars. Like, how the fuck that would logistically happen? All these people are dead 1 hour into that journey. That's why it's good. No, I don't need to shush. But
yes.
I'm saying you contrast that with sort of what they were doing in High Bob or even the other stuff from that season. It's kind of like two different shows, but the fact that it's all one continuity, I kind of love it for like the train wreckiness of it all.
Yes.
It's going to change, but I think you're going to enjoy the change.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pour one out for Joel Kinnaman's fiber intake, because we just watched the scene where finally, after like 9 years, he and his wife talk about the death of their child. And it is the hointiest hointing that ever hointed. Like, mm-hmm. He is just, it's such a cute poo face. It's so good.
Yeah.
If you don't understand what I'm talking about when I use these terms, just go, like, just Google it, look for GIFs. You will understand what I'm talking about. Speaking of understanding what I am talking about, our esteemed colleague Joe Reed also reported on Breakpoint for Primetimer. I talked about that tennis show on Netflix last week in this space, and you should read that. I will link it in the show notes. And I went through Leonardo DiCaprio's entire acting resume to see how true crimey it is. The answer surprised the hell out of me, so see what you think at Best Evidence. I will link to that in the show notes as well.
All right, here's what's coming up on our shows soon. On Friday on Extra Extra Hot Great 279, we've got True Detective Threat Level Midnight coming at you. We'll talk all about that right here on EHG Prime next week. It is episode 495, Showtime's The Woman in the Wall with returning guest Alex Collins. Don't miss it. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is one Tara Ariano. Tara.
Hello.
Hey.
Nearly 5 years ago, I accepted Dave's unofficial challenge and pitched the King of Queens episode Clothes Encounter for the canon. That pitch was unsuccessful, and about 18 months after that, I would know why. Because in the early fall of 2020, when the King of Queens was newly streaming on Peacock, the first time that it had streamed on any subscription service, as far as I knew, I pitched Vulture a ranking of all 203 episodes. That piece had a twisty path from my pitch to its publication a while later, at which time it had been cut down to just the top 50 episodes. But the point is, the exercise made me assess episodes more analytically. And when I actually had to place them side by side to rank them, I discovered Close Encounter was not the first episode I should have tried to get into the canon, or even the fifth or the 10th, because I ranked it 27th on my list. What did I rank number one? Our topic today. Here is why I think The King of Queens, Season 8, Episode 17, Present Tense, should be inducted into the canon. Number one, its inciting incident is as simple as it is complex. Doug and Carrie are celebrating their 11th wedding anniversary. Doug lightly blaming the disparity between their 125 wedding guests and these 6 people they've scrounged up for this party on Carrie needing to pull her attitude back a little. When their best friends Deacon and Kelly Palmer announce they have a gift, they found an artist in Soho who can make oil paintings based on photos, so they have had one made of Carrie and Doug. However, it seems like the painter has made some controversial interpretive choices, which its subjects discuss after their guests have left. Clip one.
Where do you want to put it?
How about the Staten Island landfill?
Carrie, they're our friends. We gotta put it somewhere.
Are you kidding me? I mean, look at this. I got one tiny arm and one huge arm.
I think it's just the angle.
Look at my hands. That's a chicken foot and that's a catcher's mitt. Are you serious?
Well, my kid, look at me. Look at my forehead. I want to spray paint graffiti on it. And what's with the beaver teeth? Look at those choppers. Are they all?
I can see where they got that from.
What is that supposed to mean?
Nothing. Your teeth are perfect. Anyway, the point is, we just gotta figure out what we're gonna do with this thing.
Well, what we're gonna do? We're gonna put a nail in the wall, we're gonna hang the picture.
All right, how about this? We hang it when we know Deacon and Kelly are gonna come over.
But Deacon's here every day. The man's obsessed with me.
All right, then just stick it in the closet, and if anybody asks, we just haven't found the right place to hang it yet.
All right, fine. And you know what? You didn't hate my teeth so much when I had to strip that speaker wire.
Doug turns out to be right that there's no way to avoid displaying the picture in the house, as Deacon comes by the next day to pick up Doug for work and immediately offers his help in hanging the painting in a place of honor. Neither Carrie nor Doug can dissuade Deacon from getting this monstrosity up on the wall. When Doug gets home from work later and finds Carrie weeping in the dark, the only light coming from the special gallery lamp Doug suggested installing over the painting, Carrie loses it. Clip two.
What's the matter?
Doug, I can't live with this painting. We gotta get rid of it. I am willing to lose them as friends over this.
Did you forget about the stupid painting?
Doug, I can't. I see it in my sleep, and when I go to the kitchen, the eyes, they follow me.
So poke them out with your giant fingers.
Come on, I'm being serious. Stop joking.
Come on, Carrie. Look, I know the painting's horrible, but, you know, you'll get used to it.
No, I won't.
It's just like that purple vase that my mom got. You hated that thing.
Yeah, I still hate it.
Yeah, but you don't think about it anymore. It just blends in with all our other crap.
Oh my God, this arm is bigger. I'm a freak.
Even in the closest friendships, there are politics to be navigated. Carrie doesn't really mean she'd rather cause a relationship-ending rift with the Palmers over this hideous painting, but her bringing that up is proof she knows it could happen if they can't figure something out. Number two, it effectively heightens the conflict. Spence, somehow, has failed to notice how awful the gift is because he's focused on the fact of it and whether ignoring the no gifts edict at the party like the Palmers did would help him and his roommate Danny move up Doug and Carrie's friendship roster. Their offer to cook and serve the Heffernans a fancy dinner in their home gets a quick pass, but when Spence brings up the painting, it gives Doug an idea, which is for Danny and Spence to fake a break-in but steal only the painting. In order to sell this lie, Doug and Carrie will bring Kelly and Deacon back to the house after dinner so the Palmers can witness the Heffernans' discovery of this violation. Unfortunately, Doug starts his performance as soon as he has walked inside while the lights are still off and the empty spot where the painting was not yet in sight, but here's how that goes. Clip three.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
What?
We've been robbed!
What makes you say that?
The couch pillow! It's on the floor!
They're probably looking for loose change.
Oh God!
All right, okay, you know what? They probably just wrecked the place. They didn't take anything.
Guys, look.
The painting? Damn it to hell! Damn!
What kind of animal would do that?
An animal with great taste!
I guess you guys should call the police or something?
Oh, what's the difference? It's probably halfway to Mexico by now.
Once the Palmers have gone, Doug and Carrie decide to celebrate with wine and French fries, except, oh no, on Carrie's order, Spence and Danny also took Doug's Mr. French Fry machine. But lest you fear that the Palmers might return and see Doug and Carrie very much not bereft over the loss of their gift, that doesn't happen. The Palmers are on their way home, bickering. It seems the Heffernans gave the Palmers a set of, questionable statues of jazz musicians on a little bandstand for their last anniversary, and Kelly and Deacon have been stewing about these statues ever since. Clip four.
You said, let's get them a really bad gift. They'll say they hate it. We can say we hate the jazz figurine. Everyone has a good laugh and goes home happy. That's what you said.
I know what I said. I'm the one who said it.
Wouldn't it have been easier just to say, we hate your jazz guys?
Look, Doug and Carrie are best friends. They went to a lot of trouble to get us those.
Those things are racist.
They're not racist. They're just bad.
So, what's next, genius?
Well, Deacon is not defeated yet. He and Kelly invite Doug and Carrie over and, after dinner, have yet another big reveal. Clip five.
I can't believe it.
I kind of like it.
What are you talking about? My big arm is bigger and my eyes look like raisins.
You like raisins.
Oh, you know what? You just like it because the painter did something to make you look handsome.
What, you mean like this?
Doug, I am telling you right now, you better tell Deacon and Kelly that we don't like this, or I swear I am calling a divorce lawyer tomorrow.
You know, 11 years, we had a good run then, didn't we?
Not that good.
Yeah, I was being polite.
See, I told you, we just had to turn them against each other. That's where we went wrong the first time.
It seems to be working.
When it seems like Doug is going to punt again with the replacement painting that is even worse, Deacon finally can't take it, and the truth comes out, clip six.
We hate the jazz statues.
What?
It's true. We hate them.
Are you serious?
We got them in Harlem.
I know. You tell us that every time you come over here.
Oh, wait a minute. So the painting was just some kind of payback?
No. We're just trying to find a nice way to bring up the topic of crappy gifts.
Nice? I have nightmares about this painting.
Yeah, well, these scare our kids.
Oh. Do they boo-hoo? Well, I'll tell you what, girl, okay? You hate them so much, they are out of your life.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, miss. Because I'll tell you something, we have plenty of other black friends that would love this.
Let's go tell the kids the good news.
What you can't hear on a podcast, that extra burst of laughter after the silence, is Doug reacting to Carrie's claim that they have many other black friends by shrugging quizzically and mouthing, "No, we don't," which we know he's right. She's full of shit. We would have met them by now. It's season 8. Fortunately, in classic sitcom style, order is restored, and all it takes is one annoying game of truth or dare Jenga with second string couple friends Danny and Spence. Does this episode exaggerate the lengths people might go to in order to avoid an awkward conversation? Sure. Would most of us raised in repressed cultures concoct elaborate passive-aggressive stratagems than just be honest? Yes, the painting prop is over the top, but it helps portray something truthful about relationships. Number 3, the painting comes to life? If all we got were the fights within and between our couples, it would be enough. But when Doug and Carrie decide to take a break from their stress to go fool around, we get a visual gag. Doug sees Carrie with one huge forearm in hand, and Carrie sees Doug with protruding buck teeth. This kills the sexy mood, and just when the viewer has forgotten about it, the prosthetics come back in the tag at the end of the episode as Carrie's giant arm defeats Doug at arm wrestling, after which Doug uses his choppers to pop the cap off his beer bottle. Stupid and juvenile, and yet, it works on me. King of Queens is, in many ways, exactly the very mid multi-cam sitcom Dave has always thought it is, but it is sneakily smart on some topics, like, as we see here and elsewhere, the idiosyncrasies of adult friendships. I hope you appreciated what this episode set out to do and that you will induct it into the canon.
Thank you, Tara. Caroline, do you want to take first stab at this one?
Sure. Okay. I picked this episode because I have to say I have an agenda.
Oh!
As a canon submitter, I have an agenda. And this is, for me, it's very important that when we watch an episode for the canon, we do it with an open heart and an open mind and not preconceived notion about what it should or should not be canon worthy. So I was very much in the tank for this. That being said, if I'm honest, I'm ambivalent on this episode. There are lots of things that I love. The first thing that came to my mind was that Leah Remini should be the star of a sitcom right now. Mm-hmm. She's the best. She's agreed. So much fun. She should be. So get on this. Whoever is listening to this, do it. Mm-hmm. I've never watched the show, and I really appreciated that they seem like a real married couple. They seem to have a real dynamic that, you know, that feels realistic to me. My main issue is Kevin James. I don't find him funny. I really don't. But that's personal. It's not a dig at the overall episode. And the other point that makes me hesitate is that I find this is a trope of sitcom, the bad gift and what are we going to do with it? But I think it's been done better in others. And specifically when I saw the painting, I thought of Friends, you know, the Phoebe's artwork, Gladys, with the woman coming out of the frame, which is, you know, nightmare inducing. And I thought it was really, really funny then. I think there are moments that are really funny in this. And actually, sometimes on Channel E4, they broadcast again Kings of Queens. And now I'm probably going to watch it with my morning coffee. You've convinced me to give it a real try. Do I think it's good enough to be in the canon, though? I'm not sure. I'm still making up my mind.
All right. While you ponder that, let's throw it to Sarah.
I was hoping that you would be more definitive one way or the other. I liked this. I enjoyed this episode a lot. I laughed a lot of times. You sort of get to the end and you don't think maybe that it's like joke dense enough. But then when you look back at what it was doing and how it was set up, once you get to sort of that two-thirds mark, it's like, oh, there was sort of a runner going that we didn't know about. And now it's here. So that was impressive in terms of the build. The whole conversation in the car with Spencer and his roommate about they said no gifts and the go-to couple, the way that the that sort of B-plot was kept really short and that they didn't overplay it, I thought was really good. Whenever this is up for canonization, I you wouldn't think that I would enjoy this sitcom, like, generally, but I always do. Maybe because this is like the only time I interact with it. Like, if I had to watch it for a whole day, maybe I wouldn't be into it. But I agree with Caroline that Leah Remini should be in a sitcom or something. Like, I remember, like, she comes in for her first entrance of the episode and I was like, oh yeah, I used to, you know, watch her every week on that Scientology show. And I really enjoyed her, like, chemistry with Mike Rinder of all things. Like, I know that wasn't the point of that, but she should get another gig. Universe, hear our cry. Here's where I'm having a little trouble, is that I'm just not sure which side of the satire Clueless virgule those statues are on. Like, I don't quite know what to do with it. Like, I think the show understands that the statues are in fact really racist and horrible, and they are sending up the, like, but we got them in Harlem. Like, buddy, do you hear yourself? Like, he doesn't, and that's the point. But I'm just not sure which compartment that goes in, and that's like, it's kind of blocking out the light that would let me assess the rest of the episode, if that makes any sense. I wish they had picked something else, but the fact that they didn't suggests to me that this is purposeful and purposefully cringeworthy. So I'm not exactly sure where I'm going to come down on that, but it was an interesting thought experiment, certainly, that it's like, I think it's fine to not approach canon prospects with an open heart. I don't know what an open heart is. We have rules. It's a canon. That's why they call it that. I'm always interested to see how Dave bends these rules for his own devices. So
what?
This was an interesting thought experiment.
I'm not the one who's wishy-washy sure. All the time. I'm here like, this is how it is. This is the law, canon law. Dave, Sarah's in town.
Before we throw to Dave, I will just say, in response to Sarah's not being sure which side of the line, whether the show knows what the satire is, that in my Vulture piece, I quote a tweet by Desus Nice of Desus and Mero, RIP, I mean, the show, he's still alive, who tweeted in May of 2020, King of Queens is a better show with a more realistic depiction of NYC, but y'all not ready for that conversation. And also, if you enjoy Seinfeld over King of Queens, you're anti-black. So that's not me saying it. That's it.
Okay, Tara.
Okay, that is good intel. and now I defer to, and just a reminder, Dave, okay. All cops are bastards. Sheriff Cole of the canon. Oh,
fine. I mean, I'm not going to argue that point. Look, Mademoiselle Caroline's wrong. I absolutely can come into the canon with preconceived notions of whether it should be it or not, because I've done it 3 times in the past, and today is the 4th exciting edition of the concentric circle argument that started with New Adventures of Old Christine, and then moved to King of Queens, and then Mom, and today back to King of Queens. Here's the clip. It's going to be confusing as hell because now it's the 4th time I'm going to be using it. And I don't care if it doesn't make sense. You're going to get the gist of it. Here we go, Dave. Take it away. Thank you, Dave.
I didn't buy these people as real people. They're very sitcom-y to me. Tara, I hate to do this to you, but this is the now 3rd generation I'm going to be playing on this clip. We heard it once with King of Queens and once with The New Adventures of Old Christine, and I stick by it. Here we go.
So, harkening back to the New Adventures of Old Christine thing, after the show, I basically said, Tara, I can go back whenever you do King of Queens in the future, I can take what I said today on the New Adventures of Old Christine, just substitute King of Queens, and I could probably make the exact same argument. I didn't go to all that effort because it turns out I didn't actually mention character names that much, but I'm going to stand by what I'm going to play right now. All right. I don't know what you guys are smoking, because this is a super average episode of an average TV show. This is so far away from canon material. I don't know what the fuck you guys are going on about. There's nothing beyond typical sitcominess going on here that would elevate it into canon material. The show is just like, it's, if, tell you what, Tara, if you can ever induct an episode of King of Queens into the canon, I promise you I'll revisit this show and give it another vote.
Oh my God. Challenge fucking accepted. I bet I can find it.
Because this show is just like, it's fine. Just like King of Queens is on TV. I can be in the same room as King of Queens. I could be in the same room as this.
I don't know if you could be in the same room as Tara anymore.
You know, if you could be in the same room as Tara after this rant.
Oh shit! It's just
a very B minus sitcom that Tara happens to like. How many times did you guys say, "Oh, the writing is poor," but you know she manages to sell it. The writing is poor and she manages to sell it. Maybe it's not canon worthy. Like maybe the writing should be great. And that her acting makes it transcendent. Like that's canon territory. So for me, it's a no vote. Screw you. Screw the world. I'm down from my high. And this show did it. All right.
So I'm generally sticking by it. But I will say, of all the episodes in this series of four things that
in the Moebius.
Yeah. That confusing clip encompassed. This is the best of them, Tara. And there are a lot of good jokes, prime which is the thought that went into what's wrong with the painting. When I saw that painting, I laughed out loud. It's really funny. Uh-huh. The girth of her arm that is just enough to make you think that it could be somebody who doesn't understand perspective very well. It's just like the right amount of wrong. I thought that was really good. You know, ain't a party until we get some broccoli chunks is a great line. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of nice little touches with this episode. But at the end of the day, for me, Tara, it's just a middling sitcom. And it's like an above average for this sitcom, but like nowhere near canon.
All right. Well, the good news is I can't try it again after this. Like if my number one ranked episode doesn't make it
great
over the line for Dave, that's it for me. Others can try.
Well, Tara, you can consider this a victory then. Let's put this to the official vote. All right, it still might get in.
I know.
Right now, I think everybody thinks I'm such an asshole that I think they're going to vote it in just to spite me.
Spoiler. I don't assume that.
So
why not?
You know, will that destroy the integrity of the canon? Yes, it will. But let's see what happens. Mademoiselle Caroline, do you think King of Queens episode 17 of season 8 is canon worthy or not?
It's a soft no for me.
Sarah D. Bunting?
See, Dave?
Yeah, just to stick it up, Dave's nose, I'll vote yes.
All right.
Also,
fine.
It was a good episode. Good presentation, Tara.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. So that means, by a vote of 2-1, that King of Queens, season 8, episode 17, present tense, you're hereby not inducted into the extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, Tara. Woo, Tara. Are you ready? It's time for Winners and Losers of the Week. And Tara has this week's winner.
Yes, I do. It is Clone High, as they announced for season 2, which is coming on February 1st. All episodes dropping on that day. Guest voices will include Jermaine Fowler, but also Stephen Root and Paul F. Tompkins, who I feel like already should have been on this show, and it only burnishes the reputation of this, like, kind of so-so revival that they will be involved. I think we said at the time it felt like it was finding its footing, like, at the end of season 1 of the revival, which is season 2 overall. It's complicated and stupid, but anyway, I'm more hopeful for the coming season, whatever we decide to call it, knowing that Stephen Root, especially, and Paul F. Tompkins, and also Jermaine Fowler, are going to be involved.
All right, we have a new winner just announced. Mademoiselle Caroline has informed us during text. She has found the perfect translation for ding dong in French. So please let us know what that is.
Yeah, yeah, I thought about it, and I think it's bistouquette.
Once again, please.
Bistouquette.
Oh, okay, fantastic. Love it. All right, Sarah, who is our loser of the week? What's the literal translation of that?
I think ding dong.
Oh, okay, all right, fine.
Perfect word for it, actually. Right.
So when you ring a doorbell in French pop culture, do people say that?
It goes bistouquette. No, it doesn't.
Darn.
But it's sort of the same, you know, whimsy. Sure. To describe something.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting, who is our loser of the week?
Dave. Vid Zaslav, because Julia has been canceled after 2 seasons at Max. Hmm. This individual hates Joy. Season 2 of Julia was kind of, not weird, but like, I mean, very anachronistic and just kind of doing its own thing. But that has always been part of the charm of the show and of its central figure. We just had a guest sing its praises last week, and I agreed, and now Julia's gone. I am very sad, just as for Avis.
Yeah, so was Brandy, who I think said on Blue Sky she wanted to do crime about this.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep. Girl, get the car. I'm here for it.
If you hear of a crime wave in the Minneapolis area, no, it's David Zaslav's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, nope, no transition. Do you know what time it is?
Non-regulation game time?
Yes! Last week, we ended a game time season, and as is our tradition, that means between seasons, we do a non-regulation game time so that Dave can play. And this game is called en français in honor of our lead topic as well as our esteemed guest. Today's non-regulation game time is all about French on TV, specifically characters speaking French, characters speaking English with a French accent, or characters thinking they're speaking French when they most definitely are not. Dave is going to play a clip. You will tell me what show the clip is from for 3 points. If you need a hint, I will tell you a supporting actor from the show. And then if you get it, it's worth 2 points. If you still need a hint after that, I will tell you a lead actor. And then you get 1 point because it's non-regulation game time. There's no steel meals, no Grossworth equalizer challenge zones. Stakes are the winner gets control of 3 steel meals, either to add to their own count or subtract from another player to be spiteful and a jerk, Dave. There are 18 clips plus a tiebreaker if we need it. Does anyone have any questions?
No. Seems straightforward.
All right. Yes. Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going first.
We will start with David.
All right. Our order is David, Sarah, Caroline. Are you ready to play en français?
Oui.
Okay. Oui. Dave, clip 1 is for you.
C'est formidable, n'est-ce pas? Et bon, ah! Après le chalou, la bûche, la de l'imagine, de l'avion, de la paix, 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 derrière du mouton, bon, bon, bon. Tchouk, tchouk, tchouk.
Merci beaucoup.
Suivez la piste. Tais-toi,
ben. Ah, pardon.
Question, because I was multitasking. Is it just 1 guess?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't say. You can guess at every level. It's not a regulation.
For this one, then, I'm going to guess. Not quite sure. Monty Python.
That is correct. Good job, Dave, for 3 points. Clip 2 is for Sarah.
Now, I want to do this gently, so will you tell him that I think he's a really nice guy?
Rose prouve que vous êtes génial.
Eh bien, on prend avec moi, n'est-ce pas? Tant mieux, elle n'est pas mon type. Ça fait quelque temps que je cherche à m'en débarrasser.
I have a question before Sarah answers.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, for shits and grins, how much is knowing what they're saying in French going to be helpful? Not
at all.
Okay. We'll find out. We'll pull Caroline after this to see. All right. Go ahead, sir. Sorry.
Hello, Fraser.
That is correct for 3 points. Clip 3 for Caroline.
Je.
Ma.
Pelle.
Pelle.
Great. Okay, faster.
Je.
Ma. Pelle.
Pelle.
Je m'appelle.
Mi poupou.
That's Friends.
That is Friends for 3 points. Back to Dave, clip 4.
And this is my universal translator. Unfortunately, so far it only translates into an incomprehensible dead language.
Hello.
Bonjour.
Crazy gibberish.
That is the weird, not quite right professor voice from early Futurama.
Good for 3 points. Clip five is for Sarah.
Mrs. Puff's Boating School, where diligent students learn the rules of the road.
I need a hint.
Your first hint, someone who is not in that clip, is Clancy Brown.
For the record, I knew it, and I have no idea how I knew it. And I think it's only from creating other game times that involve this show, mostly for the benefit of Sarah D. Bunting, because she's the closest one to this show on the panel.
Good information there.
Which I may have confused you, and I'm sorry if it did.
SpongeBob?
That's correct for 2 points. Clip six is for Caroline.
Check it. Ash. Ooh la la. Okay, so I am smoking.
What are you doing?
Ah, Jacques rolls his own cigarettes, a habit he picked up from a prostitute in Marseille. But that is not all he picked up.
Why do all your characters get STDs?
Because they're living life.
All right.
I recognize the background.
Me too. I was going to say that.
It's Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Sure is for 3 points.
That's funny. Yeah.
Back to Dave for clip seven.
Louise, she speaks English not at all.
Oh, well then, it's a good thing that some of us went to the trouble of learning a little French. Louise, venez voir votre chambre.
Oh, merci beaucoup.
Louise.
Louise?
Les valises.
Oh.
No, Louise can do it. She's as strong as a dog.
I'm just going to guess, because that sounds like Suzanne Plachette, that this is the Bob Newhart show.
It is for 3 points. This is the one where René Auberjonois comes with his mistress, it turns out, as he's a therapist from France. All right, clip eight is for Sarah.
Merci.
Thank you, sir.
Your invitation, please.
Chérie, montre-la lui.
Ah, mais c'est toi qui l'as.
C'est toi qui t'as la prendre.
Non, attends, je t'ai bien demandé si t'avais...
Quand je m'en préparais, tu
t'en... Je t'ai demandé si t'avais de la place dans ton sac, t'as dit oui.
Non, non, je t'ai jamais dit. My husband is right. It is my fault.
Go ahead.
Merci.
It's another one where the music may help.
I mean, it didn't, but was it always that cartoony and bad? Anyway, Alias?
Correct for 3 points.
Michel Vartan.
Clip nine is for Caroline, and I'll say I redacted a character name, so there's going to be a point where you're expecting to hear a name, and you will not, because I cut it. Clip nine for Caroline.
Le jeu commence. Je m'appelle.
So boogie boarding.
Boogie boarding.
Yeah, I'm going to need a hint.
Your first hint is Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh.
Whoop, I gave the wrong clip. Well, you get a free hint.
Too bad. Your other mistake,
hint is Allison Hannigan, is what I was supposed to say.
Doesn't matter now.
Nope.
Bonus.
Well, then I'm going to say How I Met Your Mother.
That's good for 2 points. And let's
I blocked that series out of my head.
Fair.
I must admit.
Let us get a score break, Sarah.
Bon.
Caroline and I are tied with 8. David has 9.
Ooh, oh, c'est bon.
Bravo.
Let's get back into it. Clip 10 is for Dave.
Au revoir, mon ami.
Indeedy. This is all so fucking sophisticated.
See you tomorrow. A demain.
No, you demand. Why is that funny?
Oh, no, I know it. I'm going to play it again, please.
Au revoir, mon ami.
Indeedy. This is all so fucking sophisticated.
See you tomorrow. A demain.
No, you demand. Why is that funny?
No.
He doesn't want to ask for a hint.
Okay. I'm playing it one more time, guys. Play it one more time. It's in my brain. I can't get it out.
Au revoir, mon ami.
Indeedy. This is all so fucking sophisticated.
See you tomorrow. I demand.
No, you demand. Why is that funny?
Is this Peep Show?
Yes. Yes, it is. I cut the clip right before that, which would have definitely given it away. Clip 11 is for Sarah.
Eat it! Eat it! Mangez la verre!
Can I hear it again, please?
Yeah. Can I ask, because I don't know anybody else's proficiency in French. Mine's terrible, obviously. Mm-hmm. Do you know French enough to know what they're saying, Sarah, there?
Not usually, no. I can read it. I can imitate it well enough to get a French roommate to move her ass.
Okay, here's what I think. Here's what I think. That you should be able to ask Caroline once for a translation.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right. Do you want to use your translation call?
No.
Okay. Here we go.
Thank you, though.
Playing it again.
Thank you.
Eat it! Eat it! Mangez la verre!
I'll just add, you know when I make these games, I only give you questions from shows I know you've seen. Hmm.
Yes, I understand.
Tara's generous to a fault that way.
cannot get it from that, so I will guess The Simpsons. Then I need a hint.
Your hint is Nicole Sullivan.
I don't know who that is. Another hint?
Your final hint was Will Forte.
I don't know. Barry?
Can I guess for just, you know, the hell of it?
Sure.
Is it Clone High?
It sure is. That's Napoleon.
Here we meet our
Snowflake
mistakes.
Day episode.
Got it.
You can sort of hear the Christmas music in the background.
Oh, okay.
All right. Back to Caroline. Clip 12.
Just follow my lead.
I'm sorry. The tables are for paying customers only, so.
That's what you're talking about.
I'm so sorry. Take all the time you need. Sir, madam.
Ooh, madam.
I think. Can I listen to the voices again?
Yep.
Just follow my lead.
I'm sorry. The tables are for paying customers only, so.
That's what you're talking about.
I'm so sorry. Take all the time you need, sir, madam.
Ooh, madam.
In interest of fairness, Caroline, if you want us to provide you what we think the French translation is, you can ask us and we'll provide it for you.
Yeah. I have theories on that one.
I think it's just...
Yeah, that was mostly gibberish, right? I need a hint. I'm sorry.
Your first hint is Carol Kane.
Oh. Ah, okay. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Good for 2 points. Nice. David T. Cole.
Yes, ma'am.
Please play clip 13 for you.
Je t'adore, mais je pense que la robe est trop petite pour vous.
I didn't know you could speak French.
There is much you don't know about me.
Ooh, I'll play that one again.
Je t'adore, mais je pense que la robe est trop petite pour vous.
I didn't know you could speak French.
There is much you don't know about me.
That's not ringing a bell. I'm just going to throw it out there because of the music. Is this Archer?
Your first hint is Patrick Warburton.
Oh. Patrick Warburton. All right. Is this The Tick?
Your final hint is James Urbaniak.
Ah, shit. Venture Brothers.
I can't believe you didn't get it from the voice of Dr. Girlfriend.
Oh, is that what I see?
Very
I,
distinctive, yes.
Yeah, but without context, I just thought it was a guy's voice because that's the guy doing the voice. So.
Sure. All right. Clip 14 is for Sarah D. Bunting.
Let's hurry and take your picture. I have plans, huh?
Oh, yeah, I know. You want to steal my girlfriend?
No, I could never take Kelly away from you. Why, just this morning, Kelly was telling me how much she loves you.
Really?
Yes. It got so annoying, I almost had to kick her out of the shower.
I feel like I looked that guy up and he's from like Long Island or something, that actor. Anyway, cheers.
Good for 3 points. Nice. Clip 15 is for Caroline, then we'll do our final score break before the end of the game. Clip 15.
Parlez-vous français?
You know, I did learn a little when my high school class went to France, but that was just stuff to pick up chicks.
Turk, je crois que Tyler se sentirait mieux s'il pouvait observer l'opération, d'accord?
Je... te... défile... pantalon.
What?
Pamplemousse!
It means grapefruit.
Yeah. That's Krebs.
It surely is for 3 points. Where are our scores before you each get one last question?
Oh, my. Well, I have, as they say en français, 11. Mm-hmm. That's 11. And Caroline and Dave are tied with 13 each.
Oh, shit.
Oh, boy. Right. Well,
oh, it's a fight
tied
to the death.
You're all lucky because I gave you easy ones at the beginning and the end. Let's hear clip 16 for Dave.
All right. Now the pressure's on to get it right. Mm.
Jean-Jacques François Jacques Jean a déçu les femmes partout à travers le Québec. Et quand les Québécoises sont déçues, elles sont déçues. Je m'appelle Marie-Camille Robidoux-Leblanc et vous écoutez. Hey, vous autres.
All right. Well, this is a bit of a cheat because we just listened to that, I think, last week. That's,
But what's it called, Dave?
It's called Shorzy.
It is called Shorzy for 3 points. Clip 17. Clip 17.
Spread eagle.
17.
All right. Spread eagle.
Spread eagle
is for Sarah.
Caroline was first. She wins.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Comment allez-vous?
Je vais très bien, merci et vous?
Très bien. Excusez-moi. Why don't they have a simple word like should in here?
You do not need the book.
Wow.
Someone does. That is Beverly Hills, 90210.
C'est vrai. All right. Wow. Clip 18 is for Caroline.
Your chef, moi, will prepare a veritable feast in the comfort of your own home while your maitre d'...
Danae will make sure your every need is attended to.
We're going to pass.
But thank you.
That's the King of Queens.
Yes, it is.
Even more recent clip.
I said, you got easy ones at the end. All right, where are we then at the end of official play?
All right, Katorzy over here is in last with 14, and it remains a tie at the top. Dave and Caroline each have 16.
Woo!
All right, to make it fair, let's wait, let the full clip play.
Okay.
And then yell it out when you know it.
Okay.
Here's the tiebreaker.
Come on, my last of paycheck bounced. My children need a wine.
The Simpsons.
Yeah, this is The Simpsons. I'm going to give that one to her because that was a clip we mercilessly used against Caroline in the early days. I feel like she needs to own it now. So this one goes to our guest.
Therefore, our final scores are...
I have 14, David T. Cole has 16, and Mademoiselle Caroline has 17.
Nicely done.
Valued guest.
Valued guest.
All right, Caroline, what do you want to do with those 3 points? Do you want to add or subtract?
I want to add for the valued guests.
Excellent. All right. Very good.
Very generous.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We traveled to France to talk Mr. Spade with Mademoiselle Caroline before going around the dial with stops at Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, So Help Me Todd, and For All Mankind. Tara didn't paint a good enough picture to get King of Queens present tense into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Mademoiselle Caroline was a winner of this week's Game Time from Tara. Next up, it is True Detective Threat Level Midnight on the next Extra Extra Hot Great. And come back here next week for Showtime's daring house renovation show, The Woman in the Wall. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
What's next, genius?
Sarah D. Bundy.
They said no gifts.
And Caroline LaFlock.
maybe these nuns had it coming.
Wow.
Oh, boy. See you next time, right here on Extra Hot Crate.
I do so enjoy our chats.
Oh, my God. That was unexpected. Not expecting something that dark.
Gorgeous.
Oh, fucking ship wheel thing.